So, in just a moment, I'm going to continue from September 1984, and I'm going to cover 1985. Just one thing I'd like to state briefly, and that is that our medium wave coverage, ever since we actually started on the medium wave with Mersey Waves in January 1984, just on Sunday evenings only, is about the same as it's been over the past couple of years. Well, anyway, just finishing off on 1984 and the medium wave operation of Radio Mersey Waves in 1984, I'd like to add that it was basically, the medium wave was in fact a joint operation with a station by the name of Radio Eleanor, which closed in September 1984. The position there was that I supplied and maintained the medium wave transmitter. And we had a sort of a joint arrangement where Radio Eleanor and Radio Mersey Waves both used the same medium wave outlet in 1984. So as I said, that was the position from January 1984 to the end of September 1984. Anyway, at the end of September 1984, the Radio Eleanor, that folded, it did, because Paul Rogers, who was running it, the pressure got a bit too great for him. And considering basically that it was just I'm trying to find the right words here to describe it. It wasn't like a station partnership that me and Paul Rogers had. Just an arrangement, really, a transmitter arrangement, where I let Radio Eleanor use the Mersey Waves medium wave transmitter in 1984, and I couldn't really, I didn't feel it was my position to sort out and all the problems that Radio Eleanor was actually getting into at the end of, August, September 1984. The aerial was coming down, all kinds of things were happening. And I tried to sort out some of the problems, but as I said, I could only put a limited amount of effort into it. So unfortunately, the pressure became too much for Paul Rogers, and he gave up pirate radio in September 1984. So in September 84, arranged, me and Paul J, to extend Radio Mersey Waves broadcasting hours and do a whole day, that's all day Sunday. And in October 1984, the early part of October, we started medium wave only. No, it wasn't, it was medium wave and FM, apologies there, medium wave and FM. Every Sunday for a whole day from October, the early part of October 1984, till approximately the 11th of November 1984, when Radio Mersey Waves received its first raid from the DTI. Well, the DTI just pounced out of the blue on that 11th of November, that day, 11th of November, 1984. It was about 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon the raid took place. So I think the DJ that was on then was John Freeman. He'd been involved in the Radio Eleanor, actually, and he'd joined Mersey Waves as a result of Eleanor actually folding. And unfortunately, he got the full whack when the DTI raided us on that day, 11th of November 1984. Unfortunately, John Freeman was caught. And unfortunately, we weren't prepared either, because the DTI just, well, they hadn't really been doing much at all, really. And then what seemed to happen is a big hit squad seemed to actually come up from down south somewhere. I think it was central London, actually. And they hit all the stations on Merseyside in commander-style raids. The first raid was on one over in Liverpool. I think it was Central Radio. On a Saturday evening, I think it was 10 o'clock, something like that, they got them. And we didn't even know about it, and we were hit at 1 o'clock on the Sunday afternoon. They also hit SCR, which was also on at the same time. They hit them about, I think it was an hour before us, or on about the same time as they hit us. So after a blow like that, I obviously decided I'd have to reorganise things with Mersey Waves if Mersey Waves was going to continue. Because as I said, the DTI had clamped down commando style, done a number of commando style raids on all the stations that were on Merseyside on that the night of the 10th and the day of the 11th of November 1984. And they hit most of the stations that were actually on, certainly all the medium wave ones. So at that stage, I decided that I'd have to really go looking for more transmitter locations and places to operate Radio Mersey Waves from, because the ones that we had really weren't really too suitable. So after the raid on the 11th of November 1984, I went back up to the places that I actually know very well from previous stations that have been running, and that's the flats in Morton, and I met up with Paul Henderson there, and he actually wanted to put his own station on, but he did have certain problems and difficulties. So what happened was he became a sort of a joint manager partner, and he became the first Radio Mersey Waves manager, and that was at the end of November 1984, and we took to the air on the 6th of December. We came back on the air after the 11th of November raid with a new transmitter. And from that point onwards, we operated every Saturday and Sunday, at least every Saturday and Sunday, a minimum of every Saturday and Sunday. And really, from then onwards, we've never looked back since, apart from the few occasions when we've been off the air due to extensive DTI clampdowns and raids. So as I said, we took to the air 6th of December, and from that date onwards we operated every weekend, and we had DJs like Martin Miller and Tara and Paul Henderson, and there was quite a few others who aren't with Mersey Waves anymore. certainly hope you like... Well, apologies there. I was saying just before I cut myself off there. I certainly hope you like the shadows, because that's what I'm using for backing music at the moment. While I'm doing this documentary on the history of Radio Merseywaves. Anyway, coming forward now to January 1985, we were getting quite settled then. And we were running every weekend regular. Now at that stage, in, when was it, January 1985, and the latter part of 1984, I don't think I should really cover all the stations at the moment. I was almost going to cover another station, but it's not really relevant to the history of Merseywaves, I don't think, really. Another station that was on at the time, so I think I'll leave that bit out. So, we had a very good year in 1985, perhaps one of our best years ever, actually. And we went right the way through 1985 without any particular problems, although the DTI did show themselves a few times, but fortunately we were one step ahead of them, and we were well prepared for them as a result of the previous raids that they did at the end of 84. And we didn't really have any more problems until the 22nd of November 1985. So we were running every weekend. I think it was 4 days a week, actually, most of 1985, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday. Anyway, I think it was in the early part of November, or at the end of October 1985, we started going 7 days a week. And also in 1985, Paul Henderson, Radio Merseyway's first station manager, left, and Mark Newman took over, and he became the second Radio Merseyway's manager. And with Mark Newman running it, and things were looking up very well indeed. And also KTC had started to get involved in Merseywaves then. I think it was around mid-July 1984 that KTC joined Merseywaves. And by the end of October, things were looking very good indeed for Radio Merseywaves. We'd not really had too much hassle with the DTI. We actually... I'm just trying to think forward now. Backward, I should say, to something that was going on around that time. Well, I think I'll skip that record out, because that's one of the few vocal records that the Shadows actually do. So, at the end of October 1985, early November, we started going 7 days a week. And on the 22nd of November 1985, we had our second hit from the DTI. Again, this was a commando-style raid that took place at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. Unfortunately, Mark Newman, they got Mark Newman and also Billy from security. And we reckon that we'd been grassed up, actually, as to where we were actually operating from, as we had quite a good setup there. I won't say by who, actually, because I don't want to really sort of tread on anybody. I'll just briefly say that it was probably somebody connected with the flats in Morton. I think that's about the most I can say on that. Anyway, it appears that we were grassed up, and We were hit on the 22nd of November, and we lost the studio equipment, but no medium wave transmitter. And the medium wave transmitter was actually still on the air. Well, the DTI had actually taken the station's decks and equipment to the actual the police station actually. I think the DTI was saying to themselves, what's the medium wave doing still on the air? So anyway, the DTI never got any medium wave transmitter. And after that raid, we went back to 4 days a week, and we were back on within a week, and we reduced our format to 4 days a week, as it looked at the time as though it was something to do with us probably covering the 7 days. And anyway, after a while, we decided to have another bash at it, and in... when was it now? I'm just trying to think when it was. No, we didn't have another bash at 7 days just that soon. What happened was, the DTI raided us again on the 12th of December 1985, only 3 weeks later. They raided the studio again, even though we'd actually moved our studio. We were completely in a different place altogether. And they actually raided there, and they took all the studio equipment, but again, they never got near the medium wave transmitter. And again, the medium wave transmitter was still on the air when they actually carried out the raid. So I think I'll cut that one out, because that's the Shadows Again with another vocal there. Well, this documentary's certainly taken a lot longer than I expected, and it seems that I've run out of the used most of the Shadows tracks up that were on that particular LP, so I'll have to get a bit more backing music, and hopefully I should have this finished between the next 5 and 10 minutes. Anyway, after the raid on the 6th of December, we got back on again within the space of about, I think it was a week to 10 days, and we were back on for Christmas 1985, and we had a really great Christmas in 1985 on Radio Mersey Waves. And as a result of the DTI raids, we improved our security at Mersey Waves and tried to make the DTI's job very difficult, and we did in fact succeed. Anyway, so towards the end of March 1986, now we're going forward now, as I said, we had a great Christmas 1985, we were on all throughout January 1986, February 1986, however, in March 1986, a problem occurred. There was an actual water leak in a place near to the studio, and the police were actually called in to gain access to the place where the studio was, and we weren't even on the air at the time, believe it or not. And things were going badly anyway. with the actual people concerned, the actual security in that particular block. And anyway, the result was that the police actually took the station's equipment, the actual decks. They didn't take any transmitter, and it was just the studio that we actually lost on that occasion. And believe it or not, it wasn't even a raid, it was just an accident that happened. And as I said, the police were brought in, and it was drawn to their attention that a pirate radio station was in this place. And unfortunately, they took the equipment and informed the DTI, and we actually lost it. And as I said, that wasn't even a raid. Anyway, we were back on again the following week. And we didn't have any more problems until about April, towards the end of April 1986. But we were having problems with the security in the Mawson Flats, which I don't think I'll go into too much. But anyway, just briefly, the security in the Mawson Flats wanted us to move our studio location from the Mawson Flats. He said that he didn't mind the medium wave transmitter being in there because of various reasons that they went into. But anyway, they said they wanted there was too many DJs going in and out and all that kind of thing. So they wanted us to move, which we did. And we got back on the air. After a few days, off the air for a few days, we were back on. And then at the end of April 1985, the DTI raided a place, well, he raided a place, attempted, he did what he carried out, what he called an attempted raid on the medium wave transmitter, but he didn't actually get it, he didn't actually get near to it. And they raided a place where they thought the medium wave transmitter was. But anyway, we were actually back on. Actually, it was that we were only off the air for the day that they actually did the raid there. Anyway, after that, what happened then? Things ran reasonably smoothly for a while. And then we started having problems with our aerial getting pulled down all the time. As fast as we put it up, it was coming down all the time. We just couldn't get an aerial up. And it appears the DTI had actually, it'd actually been onto somebody. They'd got somebody who, I want to be very sort of discreet over this. I don't want to say too much over the air about it. But they got somebody in an official capacity to keep on pulling our aerials down as fast as we put them up. So we just arrived at a situation where we just couldn't get any aerials up at the Mawson Flats at all. So we just had to really give up them flats as a bad job, really. Anyway, I think what I'm going to have to do, really, I've just been looking at the time here, I think I'm going to have to complete this consider. I'm just trying to decide now whether I should. I think I might be best finishing it off, but I'll have to try and cut out a few of the details, otherwise it's going to take too long, actually. Anyway, in 1986 was a bit of a middle of the road kind of year because we did have a number of location problems which we didn't actually really resolve until the latter part of 1986. And by location problems, I mean suitable places for the station to operate from, and the studio and the transmitters and so forth. Anyway, I think what I'll do is I'll finish off this documentary on my next show, actually. So I've covered basically up until the latter part of 1986, up until the autumn of 1986. So basically I've covered the first three solid years of Radio Merseywaves. So that's the end of this documentary for this afternoon, and I hope you found it interesting, and I'll be covering the latter years right up to date, probably on my next show. Well, the backing music there that you've been listening to is Booker T and the MGs. I think that'll do for that backing music. Anyway, let's get on with the show now. The Yardbirds from 1966.
Not without you.
Well, that's John Lennon there.
What can I say?
Well, he doesn't believe in certain things, obviously. He doesn't believe in God. He doesn't believe in the Beatles. It sounds as though he only believes in himself, but he ain't quite sure on that. Well, actually, I don't know whether I believe in God either, really. Seems to me that there is a fair possibility, actually, that religion has been something that's possibly just to satisfy the people of the time, because at that time, 2,000 years ago, the people needed something to believe in. They'd probably go mad, I suppose, if they didn't have anything to believe in. So they had to have some sort of religion or something to believe them, to believe in, because otherwise, I suppose, they may go insane or something like that. So I suppose the people needed 2,000 years ago something to believe in. So it looks like there's a good possibility in that respect. The thing that I notice about religion really is it all seems too simple to me to be the explanation for what's behind the universe, really. It just seems far too simple, and it looks to me as though it may be possibly a thing that's been organized at the time to give the people something to believe in, because as I said, they may go mad if they don't have something to believe in. And the 2,000 years ago, as I was saying, it's things were very much different than what they were now. They don't have there wasn't a lot of science and technology then. They were just like I suppose there were way of life was a lot different then. So it looks to me perhaps like a simple explanation, really, to give the people of the time something to believe in. And it seems probably today, quite naturally, a lot of people have an open mind regarding that kind of thing, really. And I think from my point of view, it's really like, if you look back, say 300 or 400 years, they used to think the world was square, but now they know that it's round. But the thing is, you see, 400 years ago they could only see it from a very limited point of view, and that's probably the situation now. The only thing is, the only difference is, of course, is I don't think we'll be able to advance much further in the understanding of the forces that are behind the universe. I don't think we can progress anymore. I won't go into the reasons for that, as I think it'll take too long to go into the reasons for that. Anyway, let's get back to the music now. A rather sort of smoochy kind of record now, from an artist by the name of Lulu from 1969.
Go. Why can't I?
and you're so afraid. I'll plead with you to stay, but I'm gonna be strong and let you go your way.
Smoochy romantic records there. First of all, Lulu, Don't Answer Me from 1969, and then followed by Gene Pitney from 1964, a legendary classic from 1964. Gene Pitney and I'm Gonna Be Strong was the title of that one. 1965 is the year now that we're going to. By a group, this record's by a group called the Animals. 1965 is the year, and the title of the record is Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood.
Baby, do you understand me now? Sometimes I feel a little mad, but don't you know that no one alive can all joy that's hard to hide, and sometimes it seems that all I have to do is worry, and then you're bound to see my other side. Like any other one, sometimes I find myself alone regretting some foolish thing, some sinful thing I've done.
Thank you.
sugar cane. How we take each other's love without thinking anymore.
George Harrison, and a classic of his from 1970. This is on a double album he released in 1970. This is ex-Beatle George Harrison with Isn't It a Pity?